Hello and welcome to iVal. I'm Jenny Prisk, your host for this podcast conversation, and we are delighted to have with us today, as a continuation of our series Women in the Law, a woman who graduated from Quantico and was assigned as the first female FBI agent in the state of Washington. She settled in Seattle, and her name is Natalie Gore. Natalie, welcome to iVal.
Thank you.
You went to university and graduated with a zoology degree, and then you ended up in the FBI. So what drew you in that direction?
I had been married and was separated from my husband at the time, and I'd been a teacher in San Francisco and had actually gotten tenure there. But I didn't like living there. I grew up in a really small town, and San Francisco was a little bit above my pay grade at that time. And so I moved back to Sacramento. I'd gone to UC Davis. And I was looking for a job that would take me away from where I was living, take me out of whatever rut I was in, train me to do this job, send me somewhere where it would be new to me, but I would know how to do the job, and I would make the same money as the man that was sitting next to me. That was a real important thing to me, even back at that time.
And that's what we like to hear.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And my dad and I were talking about future, you know, job thoughts, and he said, "Have you thought about the lab for the FBI?" Because I had worked as lab assistant in college to a couple of different professors, and so I thought, well, you know, that's a good idea. So I called them up, and they weren't hiring. They said they had a hiring freeze for a year to call back. So not a year went by, and I was thinking, I wonder if I could qualify to be an FBI agent. I would rather do that than be stuck in the lab. And I didn't know anything about the FBI. But I had heard that they like lawyers and accountants, and I thought, well, maybe they just say that to keep out the riffraff. Who knows? Who knows? So I called up the office in Sacramento. They were looking at the time desperately for qualified women to become agents. Director Hoover had died in 1972, and prior to that, women were not allowed to be FBI agents. But interim director changed that in 1972, and that's when the first two women came into the FBI. And they were trying to get more. And it's not easy to find somebody that would be willing to travel and could get through the training. And so they were pretty happy to see me. It just went from there, and I ended up in a class at Quantico in 1976, at the end of April.
And that was when you graduated?
No, that's the starting of the class.
That was the starting of the class.
And it was about 14 and a half, 15 weeks of training. So I was out of there in August, late August, and went back to Sacramento and then went up to Seattle with great trepidation, I might add.
I'm sure. This was a big deal. Tell us about that training. Give us some examples of what it entailed.
Well, it entails three different areas. One is firearms. One is physical training, and one is academic and communication, the way the whole office works, how you do all of these things, investigative techniques, all of that in addition to law. And you have to pass those three areas. If you have two failures, or you don't make the physical, or you can't do the firearms, you will be gone. And it's very scary because when that happened to somebody, they just came to the door and gave them the old come here, and the person went out in the hall, and that was it. We never saw him again. So it was
pretty bruising.
Yeah, it was very bruising. Yeah.
Yes. And so you got through the training.
Yes, I knew that I could do the academics. That wasn't a problem to me. I knew if I trained well enough, I would be able to do the physical. However, I had no idea about the firearms because I had never fired a gun before. But you fire probably 10,000 rounds of ammunition by the time you're done. So
really?
You pretty much learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. But I do have to just pass on the very first greeting that we got the night we got into Quantico. The four of us women were in our room just getting to know each other. And some young agent trainee knocked on the door and stuck his head in and said, gee, I would just like to let you guys know that half the women flunk out of here. And in fact, somebody was just left this week. And I looked at him and I said, thank you very much. And looked at
the
other three women and said, that's not us. We are going to, all four of us, get through this. And we did, and five men did not get through our class.
Oh, so, how interesting. Yes, Very interesting.
So I always like a challenge.
Yes. And it sounds as though you really rise up to meet a challenge also. So you got into the FBI, you're trained, you're now an agent, you're assigned to Seattle, Washington, and I would imagine as Natalie Sabin Gore. And
actually, so, as Natalie Sabin at that point.
Oh, as Natalie Sabin, of course, because you haven't met your husband. We haven't got to our Sheriff Bill Gore yet. I apologize. And so how were you treated when you got, you know, when you were actually, you know, alongside your male counterparts? How was that?
Well, first of all, a lot of it depends on how the head of the office, the SAC we called them, the special agent in charge, sets the tone for that. And the one that I had really thought it would be great to have female agents.
So good.
He set the tone for that. So whether somebody liked it or not, they knew they had to keep it to themselves. Mm-hmm. However, it's easy to know who those people are. You can just tell. Mm-hmm. And so there were certain group that I knew what weren't happy about it. And then there was a lot of men that were so helpful and mentored me with such kindness and willingness, and many more than didn't think that I was there to do the job, which I ended up proving them wrong. So by the time I left, I don't think I really had any naysayers at that point. The first time we went out to firearms, I'm standing out there on what you call the line, which is where you stand away from the target. And I go out there to get into a position, and when I do, men on either side of me move somewhere else. And so I automatically think that they're afraid I'm going to shoot them, because obviously I wouldn't know how to do this. And I'm very mad about that. And I find out later that that really wasn't why. I had just done the new firearms tests, and I knew how to do it, and this was the first time they were going to do it, and they didn't want me to have a better score next to them, and so they went somewhere else. So that made me feel a little bit better.
I'm sure it did. So there was that, was you won out in that situation. Were you treated any differently through that whole course of your time as an agent, being a woman?
In one office back in Washington, D.C., yes. The SAC in Seattle would put me in on everything, even if I didn't have a real job. He was making sure I was involved in everything. Because of a small office, you always took agents from other squads when you needed them. And I, in fact, had to go tell him that it was okay not to include me if he really didn't have anything for me to do. It wouldn't, you know, I would not get upset about something like that. But he was really a great guy, so he gave me every opportunity I could possibly have. But when I went to Washington Field Office, and that's, trying to think how many agents are in Washington. That's in Washington, D.C., by the way. It could be 900. I'm not sure. It's a big office. Mm-hmm. And there were only five women at the time.
Goodness.
And the SAC there wouldn't allow, and you could see my quotes there, my air quotes, women to work criminal work.
Hmm.
So the women were working applicant investigations and foreign counterintelligence investigations. And he just wasn't going to assign women to criminal work.
And did that change over time?
Oh, yes, it definitely did. That was the only place I really felt that we weren't being, obviously we weren't being treated the same. Also, case assignment, I felt that there was a lack of belief that I would do the job as well as a man to give me a more important case. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, some good cases, but not anything compared to some of the really tough guys.
But have you got a particular story that you can share with us that was perhaps very frightening for you, or, you know, something out of the ordinary?
When we were in Seattle, we had somebody sent out some letters saying that they were going to put a bomb in one of the larger grocery stores in Seattle. And they wanted a certain amount of money, which was rather curious. So we knew we were probably not dealing with a professional here. So my partner, who I worked with on the applicant squad, because agents always start out doing background investigations.
And was this male or female?
It
was a male. Yeah. Okay.
Jim Brown was his name. And mm-hmm. we had such a good time together that I had to get out of the car when we went on the radio, because we couldn't stop laughing sometimes, and so it wasn't, we would just stop, and I'd stand outside, and then he would talk, and then I'd get back in, and we'd go off and do what we needed to do, but anyway, he and I were in this little, sort of like a van, anyway, and we're just waiting to see what happens. We've got surveillance set up on this. We've worked this for a long, long time, and we have identified this person, and now it's a matter of waiting to see him actually go try to pick something up, which he thinks is the money, and then being able to arrest him. And Jim and I are in the close area there when it's decided to get him and to arrest this man. He's gotten back into his car. And so we get out of our car and run over there. My partner, Jim, just throws himself on the hood of the car, pointing his gun at the window at this guy. Which, by the way, if he had shot it, probably wouldn't have gone through the window. It would have just gone around the window. But I didn't have my weapon out. So he was arrested. It was an elderly man who had been laid off at Boeing and lost his pension. And his wife was ill, and he needed a certain amount of money to take care of her. I mean, you get these kind of stories where it's not a real bad guy. It's just a man that didn't think this through very well. Mm-hmm. Now Jim and I are taking him back to the office, which you have to take him back and interview him and do all this stuff and then take them into the jail and stuff, and where the rest of everybody's going off to celebrate. And while we're the ones that got him, and we're in the office having to talk to him. And so when we're driving in, he says, "You really scared me when you pointed your gun at me." And I said, "But I didn't point my gun at you." He said, "Yes, you did." He said, "You pointed it right at my head at the window." And I said, "No, I really didn't. I didn't have my gun out." And so later on, I was told that I pointed my index finger at him. So the story was that I could arrest somebody with my index finger instead of my gun. So anyway, I don't think that's what I was doing. I thought I was putting my hands out in case he decided to take off with the car and I could just like sort of jump back from him. But we don't know.
Who knows? But we'll keep an eye on that index finger from now on, I think. As a result of that, were there any situations in your career where it was more advantageous to be a woman agent, a female agent?
The first one that comes to mind is a really important one to me because it was the first actual arrest that I was involved in, and this was at the invitation of the case agent. He had gotten in touch with me to go with him because he had figured out, he thought he knew where this escaped federal prisoner from, I think it was like Sing Sing in New York or something, was. He had a wife in Seattle, and the wife's father had been calling up the FBI trying to give whatever information he could so that this rat could be arrested and his daughter would be out of this situation. And so the agent's last name is Cusack, and that's what we always called him, Cusack, and he had decided that the woman was getting paid that day and she would be taking him money. So we surveilled her, and sure enough, we're up on a hill watching this, and here he comes across the street and he gets in their car. Cusack just says, "Let's go." And I thought we were going to drive over there, but no, we had to run over there. And I was worried about my shoes. Was I going to break my ankle? But anyway, so when we got there, the guy told the woman she was driving to take off. And so Cusack like went into the window and grabbed the wheel. And so he was jumping out of the car to run away. And I came around the front of the car, and when he looked at me, he was so surprised. He stopped. He didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. At which point, there were other agents in the vicinity, and they came over, and they allowed me to be the one that cuffed him, by the way, so that was very exciting. Mm-hmm. And then in another one, I had a case that was my case, and it was a passport violation where people would get dead baby birth certificates and get a passport, and they were up to no good, obviously, with these things. And this one guy had gotten one in Seattle, and I was the case agent. It turned out he actually came to pick it up in our jurisdiction, and I had to view him actually signing for it. So I was standing behind him when he did that, and I turned around to go outside so we would get him when he was outside the post office, and I was following him, and he stopped and opened the door for me, held the door open for me. At which part I walked out and he came out and I said, "Thank you very much, and you're under arrest." So that was another, it wasn't expected. And women can defuse a situation. A man might want to fight another man to just to make himself think that he's tough and or whatever, he didn't go easily or whatever it might be. But let's face it, all these people have had mothers and sisters, and in most cases, men behave much better if there's a woman involved in it. And there's no competition there between the man and the woman to see who's stronger. We all know they're stronger, but we've got other ways to
yes.
do things.
Oh, and that's
yes.
very interesting yeah. to hear about those other ways. So as time went by, I think you met the man who was to become your husband.
I did.
While you were in the FBI. How long into your time there did you meet Bill Gore?
Oh, right away, because you meet everybody right away. And okay. in fact, the first day at work, that we were on two floors of the federal building, and people kept coming by all day long. I mean, agents came by, secretaries came by, everybody came by. Everybody wanted, they just wanted to take a look, you know. So,
who are these women?
And in fact, the first day when I got there in the morning, we were going out for coffee. And this group of agents that worked, this particular squad, it was a conglomeration of all kinds of issues that didn't really take a gunfighter. So we get ready to go, and we all get up and we go towards the door to go out. And they're just like stumbling over each other because they don't know what to do. They don't know whether they should open the door for me, or that might insult me because now, you know, I am a female FBI agent. Or if they don't and they just walk in front of me, or are they going to, I could just see all of this going on in their heads. And so I just went up and opened the door and I said, let me do it, and walked through, and then we all went out. And so we didn't have to worry about that after. I really think being able to have a sense of humor and not taking offense at some things that aren't really meant the way you may think they're meant. For example, the firearms incident, I completely misread that, really was the reason for the success of my being the first woman there. I was able to deal with those men. I grew up in a small town. It was a logging town. I grew up with boys, and we all played together, and I was used to dealing with boys. And so it wasn't intimidating to me to be around a lot of men. And they're pretty nice-looking men, by the way, and so it was easier.
That made the job easier.
But anyway, Bill was a supervisor of the big squad. He had kidnappings and bank robberies and all sorts of things. So that's where the other men were that probably didn't think I was the best thing that came their way, because these were the real macho agents. Anyway, so I got an apartment that ended up being across the street from his apartment. Now, he and I have a different story about this, because I didn't realize he lived there, but he will say he knows I did and I was stalking him. So this is a joke between, it's been a joke between us forever. Anyway, so actually he moved across town very quickly after I moved in. It was amazing, but anyway, whatever. So I got there in 1976 in August, and Bill and I ended up getting married in 1978 in September.
So the move was worth it.
Yeah, I wasn't, that was the last thing I was interested in. That was not it. I'd had a failed marriage. I wasn't really looking for another marriage. So anyway, it was sort of a surprise to all of us, especially Bill was a bachelor, and he was 31 when we got married, so he really didn't have any experience of being a husband, so he was sort of nervous about it. But
yeah,
anyway,
he was waiting for the right woman to coach him.
So he was going up in management. He was a supervisor at the field level, but he had ambition to continue up in the bureau to, you know, eventually run an office or whatever. And so he was transferred back to Washington, D.C. to headquarters. And we were actually the first couple that was transferred together. Prior to that, secretaries would often marry agents, but they were required to quit the job once they did. They couldn't stay in the office with their husbands. And so they did send us together. I went to the field office and Bill went to headquarters, and we were there for 6 years.
Would you recommend a career in the FBI to a woman or a young girl who was thinking of it?
You have to, there's certain things you have to be willing to do if you want it to be one. A lot of people, and this is men too, don't really want to leave the area that they grew up in. They're comfortable where they are, their families are there. The thought of moving, not just once, but perhaps more than once. Bill and I moved him seven times and me six with him. So management, that you move more than you do if you're just a field agent. But you need to be able to look at that as something good. You're meeting new people. You're going to a new place. Mm-hmm. We went to very lovely places. I mean, Seattle, Honolulu, and actually Washington, D.C. I really loved it back there. Anyone that wants to be in law enforcement has to really come to terms with the fact that they're wearing a gun, and they have to use it if they have to use it, and they're also their life is at risk. So that's something that has to be well thought out. Mm-hmm. But it's an incredibly challenging job, and it's interesting, and the possibility exists every day that something really amazing could happen that you'll be involved in. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe it turns out not that way, but there are some amazing days. For example, I was in Washington, D.C. when we were able to send the Iranians out of the... They were no longer in what's called an embassy, but they were... It's called an intersection. They were kicked out, and we were the ones that did it, and that was a rather satisfying day, mm-hmm. I felt, because that had been a really horrible time with the hostages and all of that mm-hmm. that had gone on at that time. And then I worked for counterintelligence when I was in Washington, D.C., and one in Hawaii where actually we caught... I was a case agent there, and there was one man out in the Atlantic Fleet and one in the Pacific Fleet, and they had given away some very, very top secrets, and so I was involved in that investigation. So, you know, those are pretty important things that I can feel good about having done.
Yes, looking back over mm-hmm. your career, that's terrific that you have those moments and those memories. So we're coming very quickly to the conclusion of this conversation, but I just wanted you to tell our listeners about your life now, because you're an artist.
Yes, I always loved art from the time I was very young, and any school project that required any kind of art, I was excited about, and took art in college because I was a science major, which really occupies the right side of your brain, and you need a rest from it, so I took a lot of art classes off and on. After I was out, I took classes. Since 2003, I've been doing mm-hmm. it more regularly, to the point that I have so many things stacked up in my art room that I'm thinking of just giving them away.
Well, there'll be a lot of very grateful people if you do, because I've had the pleasure of viewing your artwork, and it's very attractive. So you've had a very interesting life. You've, you know, transferred from that degree in zoology and to the FBI with that illustrious career, looking back at it as an agent, and now to the art world. Do you have just any final words for anybody about the FBI?
The FBI is populated by very well-educated people that have grown up normally in pretty much a middle class type of environment. They're good people. They're really very good people. It breaks my husband's heart and mine when we hear people say that they're not, because we were in long enough to know that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody has a bad apple here and there, but on the whole, these are professional people. And the other thing that is so admirable about them is their ability to keep what they do to themselves, when it's very tempting to be able to be the star of something and tell somebody something that you can't. You just do your job and you don't take credit for that. And that, to me, is very admirable. We're a family. The people that we have met in the FBI, we still see when we can. We still exchange Christmas cards. In fact, on the 19th of this month, I'm traveling to Quebec City to spend a few days with three former female agent friends of mine came in the Bureau about the same time I did. Mm-hmm. And one of them's having her 70th birthday, and so we're going to go celebrate. So that's the sort of relationship I'm talking about mm-hmm. that could last that long.
That's a wonderful story. And so May of 2017 is going to be a riotous occasion.
Yes, and so that's 41 years after I came in. So that's a long time to maintain relationships that you would want to go spend time with each other. Yes. We don't see each other very often, but we still have a major simpatico with each other. We've all gone through the same things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, that's a lovely note on which to end this conversation. So Natalie Sabin-Gore, thank you for joining us today and sharing your story of being the first Seattle, Washington FBI agent, and all the other stories and details that wrap around that. Thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thank you.